I was just remembering, man. I didn't fuck. That's funny.
Remembering what?
That I didn't have a stereo at all. I only had handheld shit until, like, my grandma had a boombox, but it sounded like shit.
Didn't you say that, like,
So I didn't
it was
have.
early on when you started collecting records that
Yeah.
you just had
Just.
turntable and headphones
Yeah.
for
Ever.
how long?
Probably since I was 17, 16. I had the
Okay.
turntable from Porno Wayne.
Yeah. Do you
But to have
still have
actual. Do I have that
that
one?
one?
I
Yeah.
do.
Do you?
It's packed away in the basement. It's not worth shit.
No, it's just cool because it was your
Yeah.
first. I still have my first. Well, actually, no, I don't. I have my first, like, real
Yeah, a
turntable.
decent one.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was brand new in the, like, new old stock back then. I gave him $10 for it. It was like brand new. It was fucking crazy, right?
Fuck, you can't even buy a broken one
I
for
know. That's
$10.
what's
Even if it's, like, complete shit, you can't touch
that's
it.
crazy. But yeah, so I didn't actually have a stereo with speakers and like a little subwoofer until fucking way later.
And I was that.
Probably was like 16 by the time I, because otherwise it was just always the portable shit.
Right. And was that because of access to the equipment or money or lack of knowledge of having the
I
whole
think it
setup
was
or what?
like money because I was a kid and that shit was cheaper than a stereo system
Right.
and my mom didn't want to hear my shit.
Yeah, that too. You got parents
You
in the
know,
house that
or
are
even if she
like.
did, I guess, I don't know, because I like the first tape I got, and that's how I started as far as formats was on a cassette. And I've mentioned this before, but it was a Criss Cross single. So, like, that was a cassette, you know,
Yeah.
and I had like whatever kind of knockoff Walkman. But, no, but I didn't have a full stereo, or not even like, not a full stereo like we have now, but, like the bigger like comes apart, but you can make like a boombox thing out of it till I was like fucking 16 or 17. So I think that's just why I prefer headphones
Yeah. See,
listening to shit.
I like started the reverse.
Reverse way,
Yeah,
yeah.
so when I was a kid, my stepdad, around when I was like 9 or 10-ish, he was a gar he worked for a garbage company. And then excuse me, he also there's a DJ company here still called GT Sounds. He started that with Tim LaFlesh, the other dude that runs it.
Yep.
So between that, like being a garbage man, he would find shit all the time. So he'd bring home speakers
Yeah,
and
that's
stereos
sick.
and whatever. So I would just find bits and pieces. You know, you'd get a stack that sometimes nothing worked, sometimes everything worked, sometimes one speaker worked. I
Yeah,
just
just random.
Frankenstein stuff. Like,
Yeah.
I would build like a little tower of power. And I had the glass case that had the little magnet, and, like you push and it pops
Yeah,
out
I
or
still
whatever.
have one of
Do
those.
you? Yeah.
It's like, but it's big. It's odd.
Yeah, I had that, and the first stereo that I really remember setting up was a Fisher, and it was one of those ones that was like a combo unit that had like CD player up top, cassette deck, it had an
Was
equalizer,
it all
and
one
it,
unit
yeah, like
though?
all one
Yep.
thing, and then you could plug in speakers and whatnot to the back of it.
Yep.
So I took that, and I would just start, you know, it had the speakers that came with it. And then you get another pair and you plug them into there. And then I just kept like upgrading.
Yeah,
And
that's
ever
cool.
since then, that's what I've done with stereo equipment is upgrade from what I had or either sell stuff that I no longer wanted to buy other things, trade,
Yeah.
whatever it is. And then I didn't get into headphones like till down the road, like
Yeah, it's
way later
totally the
down.
other way. But it's the same thing with fucking Nintendo. Like, my mom told me that shit would fuck up the TV. Until I was, and I'm like 10, 12 years old. Like, wait a minute, that shit doesn't make sense anymore, Mom. Come on, you
Yeah.
know what I mean? So I'd
Like
have like a
the.
Game Boy, you know what I mean? Instead of whatever else.
She said gaming would fuck up the TV.
No, like, whatever the. She just said whatever she could because she's like, I'm not shelling
I'm not
out
buying
like
it. Yeah.
250 bucks when I make $3 an hour, you know?
Right.
And
No, I get
it's
that.
funny though. I mean, it worked. But
I get
again,
that
that's with the
now.
whole headphones and then I'm on my own little world type of thing.
Yeah.
But and it depends.
Headphones is cool for, like, so, like, now the issue that I run into a lot of times is, like, my kid or my girlfriend's always home. So, I can, but it's got to be within reason. I can't, like, crank my stereo up like crazy. Not that either of them care, but just out of respect they're trying to watch TV in the other room and all you hear is fucking, you know, seven speakers blaring.
What pisses me off, though, in that, and it's selfish, but, like, if I'm trying to listen to a record and I got my stereo cranked and then I'm like, hey, like, I'm like, oh, dude, what the fuck? Like, I got to start over again.
Yeah, you got to go back to another
reason for the headphones.
Yeah. I'm like that even if it's not a record. Like, if you're in the car and you're playing a song and somebody's talking through, like, your whole favorite part of the song, like, I'll restart that bitch. Yep. I'm like, shut the fuck up. I'm trying to listen to this.
It used to really suck when it was the radio.
Yeah, you can't get back to it. Yeah. You're trying to call in, like, get home. Like,
yeah, that shit's
calling the request line and shit.
But, yeah. And then Discmans. But my first, stereo was, like, that Aniak or whatever the fuck.
Onkyo?
And, yeah, one of those receivers. And then just some Sony shit. Serwin Vegas. And I packed all that shit into a little car and drove it home.
Serwin Vegas seem to be, I don't know if this is like this everywhere, but here. And I've heard it's because Young's was selling them. Like, they had, like, a deal with Serwin Vegas.
Yeah.
And I think Denon, maybe, for, like, stereo or for amplifiers and receivers and shit. But I know Serwin Vegas for sure. Like, they sold the shit out of them here. Because a lot of people here rant and rave about Serwin Vegas. And I think that they were good at one point in time for what they were, for, like, loud blasting garage speakers and whatever.
I used them because...
But there's not much, like, clarity to them.
Because they were bassy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And, like, they were, like, a... They were the speaker for the guys reasonable. That are, like... Well, yeah, one, they're not super expensive.
That would be, like, the equivalent of almost, cool. like, Polk audio now.
Exactly.
Very... It's, like, entry level.
Yeah. But I think Polk now, like, their entry-level speaker has a lot more clarity to it.
Oh, fuck. 20 years.
Less bottom-end pushed. Because back then, like, it seemed like Serwin Vegas especially. I'm trying to think of what it... Even, like, some of them older Tower Fisher speakers and shit like that. Like, they just crammed a whole bunch of low-end into it, and it just sounded really muddy. Like... But you're out, like, drinking in the garage with your friends or whatever, and you got that thing cranked and you feel it sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're trying to sit there and listen and, like, really hear everything that's going on, I don't like using audiophile because it sounds pretentious. But if you're trying to, like, listen.
Yeah, and I was not doing that at that time
right.
either.
And a lot of I wasn't either, but.
So it was like,
I'm just
whatever
saying,
I can get to piss my neighbors off,
right.
really.
Today. I would not buy Serwin Vegas, but
well,
as a kid,
I
would have bought anything that I possibly could have, and I would have...
Well, depending on price, I don't know,
right.
that sounds pretentious too, but
I just
Serwin
know that
Vegas
I could
were
find...
like the thing like in the early 90s,
yeah.
from my understanding.
I just know that for the price of, like, let's say Serwin Vegas, I think they're D9s, are like the really sought-after Serwin Vegas
speaker.
Yeah, I haven't
even looked
at
them
forever. They're like $800.
Oh, you can get so much.
And
for
I was like, man, you can set yourself up way better for $800 mm-hmm. than that. But I guess if you like, if you were a, we have this one guy at the store who's like a Serwin Vega collector. Like he runs like 16 of them or some
Holy
shit in his
shit.
Garage. But he's always blowing stuff too, and he's like, I broke this, that, and the other. I'm like, well, dude. You're running 16 power-hungry speakers off of one receiver.
Yep.
Like, you need some separate amps.
I ran into that problem with, like, you know, I blew a subwoofer, like, 2 weeks before. It was close, dude, before the warranty was up.
Warranty, yeah.
Like, 3 years have gone by, and they couldn't, and I got it from Gaylord. So I think it was ABC Warehouse at the time. And they're like, we don't even carry that shit, and they gave me a Polk one for it.
It was the subwoofer that you blew a Polk sub, or the replacement sub was a Polk?
The replacement was the Polk, and the Serwin Vega was the original.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But it was like, it was the, for all intents and purposes, it was the same thing, like, except for the name, really, you know. And a few, I'm sure, a few little things here and there. But it was in a $150 sub, $200 sub, wasn't anything expensive, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, building that shit up's fun, dude.
Oh, I agree. I love piecing together stereos and stuff. Even now, like, I got random stereos throughout my house. Like,
when I was cleaning my, with that dumpster and shit, I found, like, some shit I forgot about, you know? I was like, I got a Sansui Quadraphonic stereo just chilling, and
just
it works.
Just hanging out in the basement.
The radio doesn't work, but the fucking everything else works. And then I thought I sold my little Marantz, I think it's a 1060. Or 1030, whatever. It's a little, like, 28 watt. I'm like, oh, shit, he was in a tote. Like, I thought I fucking traded that off or whatever. But I don't know.
Just a little, like, two-channel thing?
Yeah.
Or was it a headphone amp?
It's just a little two-channel guy. They're pretty common Marantz fucking, like,
yeah.
Entry point into, you know, that collecting that shit.
Yeah, not everything that says Marantz on it is...
$1 million.
$1 million or top of the line. Even.
But I do like that little amp.
Yeah.
It pushes fucking shit pretty well. But
well, plus if it's not like big and clunky.
Right.
You
that's
can
just
kind
it.
Of fit it on like a desk or something.
Yeah, it's
like
a smaller
little small
one.
Yeah. And so right now for Sarah, you run Outlaw amp and ELAC speakers, right?
Yeah.
And you just run two channels. You don't have subwoofers?
Nope.
No. I couldn't remember.
And there's a couple of reasons for that. Money, room, and I know once I get them, I'm not going to be able to go back.
Yeah,
so I just, that's why it's like,
yeah.
I'm just, I can't do it.
And it makes sense, like, wait until you can, because, well, the thing is, like, you start with one and it's cool and whatever, but then when you can't really go back at all is when you have two. Once you have two and it, makes the bass feel less localized in a certain area in the room. Like if you got one like in the front and back of your room or left and right of your room or whatever, it fills everything up that much better.
I can just imagine.
And then when you hear it with one again,
oh, it sounds
it just
all
feels,
fucked up.
It feels lacking.
Yeah, I believe it. I've listened to, obviously, subwoofers and shit, but
I think Kirchhoff only has one sub, if I remember right.
Probably.
It's that one right by his kitchen entry.
But see, then that's another thing, is he's, again, running all kinds of surround whatever.
Yeah, he runs...
And it's like you almost have to have the right format to run that shit.
I think I believe it's eight Cambridge audio speakers in his
ceiling. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's cool, but for movies especially...
Yeah, for movies, that's where it really shines. For
but, like,
music, it can be...
You have to have, like, a fucking formatted disc that can play it in that kind of surround sound shit.
Yep.
But
he
just,
has...
You know,
he's got that Oppo 205, so I know he's got the...
Yeah, he can do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah, I just always liked running the two-channel.
Two-channel's great for... I love jazz in two-channel. Just like on my amp on my Denon, it has a direct button that gets rid of like all EQ and everything else. And it'll just run straight two channel with subwoofers. So it's 2.3 on my system technically. But for like jazz and stuff like kind of folk rocky stuff like Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
Two channel, I love it because you can sit and like pinpoint the channel separation that you got going on. And you can do that with surround sound too, but just for if you have a less trained ear, I guess, so to speak, like just running to two speakers is the way to go for it. Like I love that just natural sound of the stereo.
Yeah, I don't, like I said, I don't go, I mean, that's like to run a whole nother system for me to go to the surround. And I just like, I like fucking the two channel and making the speakers disappear.
Yeah.
Like by getting in the, like the right spot, hit that fucking cherry point. It's awesome.
And if you got the right room, which your like the upstairs of your house is set up pretty well for it.
For the two channel,
for
definitely.
For the two channel, like
it's narrow.
It fills up that whole, yeah, it's like a big rectangle.
Yeah.
So it fills it up nicely.
But I would definitely run a fucking surround sound downstairs, though, if I was ever to do some shit like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Honestly, the actual reason that I started building my, like, home theater-ish setup was somebody I know was selling those focal speakers that I bought. Somebody else I know was looking for a stereo but wouldn't buy those speakers because he was like, oh, they're too expensive. Because he wanted, like...
Well, they're focals.
Yeah, but I think he only wanted, like, $300, like, per pair or whatever, and they were retail, like, $800 a pair or something. I was like, dang, that's a fucking steal.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
So the guy that I told them about that didn't want to buy them was like, oh, they're too expensive, I'm not going to buy them. So I ended up buying them because I was like, well, fuck it, I got the money. Like, they're good speakers, so I bought those and just kind of went from there. And then bought some other ones that I found in North Carolina that were also focals. But Don is the person, actually. Don, for reference, is this guy that hangs out in our store. If you're listening, what's up, Don? Don is the guy that actually, like, really got me into, like, the multi-channel setups and, like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's fucking, he knows all that technical fucking number crunching shit.
Yeah, and then once I started, like, sort of making that, because I had a 5-1 setup with my Poke and Pioneer system, and then I kind of broke that up. My kid's using the back bookshelf speakers for that now. But once I had a 5-1 and I started playing, like, stuff like this. So this is Opeth Still Life. This is a DVD audio, but it has a surround mix that's done in 5-1. So for anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, it utilizes, like, the whole surround of the stereo. So you have vocals that are sort of isolated towards the center and front, and then you have things that are popping up, you know, left, right, behind you, etc. And it's a really cool listening experience, but it takes the right gear to run it.
Well, just,
and it was, it a just separates short-lived the
instruments
format
to the different fucking channels.
Yeah, but, like, you'll get, like, those were, like, the earlier days of 5-1s. And then they did, like, Super Audios that had multi-channel setups, and now they're on to, like, Blu-ray audios and
yeah,
Dolby
crazy
Atmos things. But it just makes everything feel, like, very fluid, like, how it moves. Like, it feels like it encapsulates or captures you in, like, the center, like when you're at the movie theater.
Yeah, yeah, for
like
sure.
You're hanging out in the center stage, or not stage, center seating, and you got shit going on all around you. You got bullets flying past you, explosions behind you, in front of you, and it's cool to hear music done that way.
Yeah, I can definitely,
but
like,
not
the Pink
everything
Floyds and
yeah, Pink Floyd's
like
a good
that
one. Like
that Blood
this
Incantation that just came out would be a fucking good one.
This right here is Peter Gabriel's, like, most recent record. And I'm not a big Genesis or Peter Gabriel fan, but I've listened to this, like, 100 fucking times. Just because the Blu-ray, the Dolby Atmos mix of it sounds outstanding. Is there something attached to the back here? This was the Blood Incantation that just came out. This had, like, the, try to do this without fucking dropping everything. But this had the three CDs and the Blu-ray in there. And this is done in a 5-1 and a Dolby Atmos mix. And I've only gotten through the first two CDs so far. I haven't had a chance to do the Atmos mix because I'm waiting for nobody to be at my house. So I can actually, like,
now what are all four discs then? Oh, the blue one's a Blu-ray, right?
Yeah, so the other three are CDs. Disc one is the album itself. Disc two is the motion picture soundtrack because on the Blu-ray there's a movie that they made. It's like a short film type of thing. And you remember, like, last year they had that Luminescent Bridge single?
Yeah, yeah.
That was just the two songs on the record. So the record was the only way they released it. This is the first time they put it on a CD.
Oh, gotcha.
So disc three has those two things. Disc two is the soundtrack to the movie. Disc one is the album. And then the Blu-ray disc is the little movie thing. I think there's a documentary of, like, how they made it, like, recording snippets, shit like
that.
Yeah,
that's fucking sick.
And then there's the Atmos mix and the 5-1 surround mix. And this was like, I believe retail, it's like $65. And it's like a German import that they...
Yeah, that shit's nice when you can grab sets like that every now and then with all that extra shit on there. Like, makes it worth it for sure.
Yeah, especially like those guys. Like, they're, to me, like the most innovative metal band out right now as far as pushing boundaries that nobody else has really gone into for metal.
There's a flute on there, and I'm not against it, you know?
I know. Normally, I hate flutes.
I'm like, Jethro Tull here. Oh, well, yeah, maybe not.
But, how many bands can you say are collaborating, at least in metal, are collaborating with Tangerine Dream?
It's weird.
Bringing in, like, snippets of Yes and Pink Floyd and King Crimson and stuff like that. Like, it's not very common, and especially for those guys, like, they have, we've talked about this a million times, but their side projects and everything they've done is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, they're just, like, amazing fucking musicians.
I don't know what's in the water in Colorado that makes them do what they do, but their talent is wild. Like, it blows me away.
Locking themselves up somewhere just playing fucking tunes.
Yeah, I think it's just like one, I feel like they're sort of like how you and I are. Like, they have appreciations for so many different kinds of music.
Yeah, they just want to smash it all in there.
Yeah, they want influences brought in all together, but...
I could definitely hear, like, Eddie Van Halen solos in there, too. Like the fucking finger tapping, but real slow.
Yeah.
As compared to, like, you know, like, Children of Bodom. Like, they almost took it back to where it's... It's not all about how fast you go, you know what I mean? It's like how the tone is and shit. It's very interesting fucking, like, death metal record, if you will, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was surprised, for sure.
I had high expectations, but not, because the last one, Time Wave Zero, was that all ambient record, which was cool, but I almost feel like it should have been, like, a side project, but then again, they have, like, five fucking projects, so they're probably like, we're not starting a whole other band. But it was cool, but I'm glad they sort of blended that element with the metal element and, like, met back in the middle now
for this record. Yeah, definitely the type of, like, we're talking headphones or versus fucking speakers. Like, for me, this is a headphone album, like,
yeah, because you want to pick out the nuances and everything. Yeah,
but I could also see how it would be fucking badass to do an album like that in, like, a fucking Atmos and surround, because there's so much going on. You know,
yeah,
what
it's
I mean?
Almost like a movie setting,
right?
Like,
right.
Really, if more bands would release Atmos recordings in a physical format, because most do it on Apple Music at this point. I'm not going to get into all the details of that because I could do a whole nother episode on that. But
yeah, and digital fucking.
Yeah. Most artists do have it done now for digital streaming. But a lot of times, and this has happened with Super Audio CDs, it's happened with DSD, DVD audios, it's happened with multi-channel everything, they end up putting out the same exact shit every time. It's always Steely Dan, it's Pink Floyd, it's Alan Parsons, it's Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, it is like basically the fucking Laurel Canyon and a couple of extras.
I don't know. Mobile fidelity run,
right,
of
for
titles.
Sure. That's what I was just thinking, is you could grab a MoFi catalog and there you go.
Exactly. So to see, like, Blood Incantation, to see Mastodon, to see, like, all these newer era, I wish Tool would do it. Like, really, they would benefit so much from it.
And they haven't?
No. It amazes me that they haven't, because their Fear Inoculum record that they came out with a few years ago would be outstanding.
I thought, honestly, if you asked me, I would have thought they did that.
But you would think, because it fits their music.
Yeah,
the
fucking thing had a screen on the case. Like, what the fuck? It's not in, like, surround? Weird.
No, it's not. And it should be.
Danny Carey would
sound
fucking sick.
Yeah. Anyway. But if more artists would do that physically, I would buy less records, because currently that is, like, my favorite format to listen to. It is the most fun to me. Like, I have this, this is Soft Cell Nonstop Erotic Cabaret. This is an Atmos recording as well. And they're not, like, too expensive in most cases. I mean, it's just a Blu-ray disc. I think this was $25, I believe. Or that's what I paid for it, at least. I don't know if it was more or less, but...
I only have that on a used vinyl.
I have the record, too, but I bought that just because there's a lot of cool shit in that record. I just wish more artists would do that. Like, these are a couple older ones. Like, this is the Nine Inch Nails Downward Spiral. This has the Super Audio multi-channel on it on the double disc. This is the deluxe edition. If anybody has heard this, I don't know how anybody could listen to another version of it, because this is like, you know how like you get that one album, like the, we'll use Kind of Blue for an example. There's like the definitive edition this is it for Nine Inch Nails. And I've never heard the record, but I don't need to. Like, there's just no way.
Oh, like Downward Spiral?
Yeah, there's just no way it sounds better than that.
The only Nine Inch Nails album, I take that back. I have an EP, too, on wax. But everything else is, and the first one, Pretty Hate Machine, but everything else is on CD as well.
See, to me,
just sounds better.
That sounds better on CD.
I think it's just how it's designed, right? Yeah.
Like, there's always that argument of analog versus digital. And, you know, most people will be like, oh, digital sucks, like everything. It does if you do it incorrectly.
See, I think it's...
But if you can do...
At this time,
if you know what you're doing...
It's just as good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's better, to be honest with you, in some cases. It depends on the music, though.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because
you can't,
if you're trying
to... You can't just
to,
say that. There is, it's a lot of gray area.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
For sure. That's a lot of back and forth. But there's more possibilities in digital, which can be harmful, though, because the benefit to vinyl and records is there are limitations. So you can only work within this certain frequency range. You can only work within this time limit, instead of having this huge disc that you can pack 20 gigs worth of shit on.
Well, have you noticed as you got older, like, I really noticed this now, where I didn't so much before. Like, obviously, you know, all the skits and all the hip-hop, right? And there's, like, 20-some fucking tracks. You're like, oh, man, this is sick. But then it's like, there's really only 9 or 10 tracks on there. Yeah, and the rest are skits.
Wu-Tang was good for that.
I mean, like, there's so many. There's a big list of that did that shit. Which
only,
was the
only
thing.
Only Built for Cuban Links had quite a bit of skits on there.
But
it was almost like every other song.
I think that, in my opinion, the best bang for your buck is the CD. Overall value, like what you're going to get, sound quality.
Yeah, because so for vinyl, it's.
Versus a record. It's going to.
Now, everybody has always heard, like, oh, vinyl sounds better than CD. And it does in the right cases. However, it costs substantially more to get that sound out of a record that you're really wanting to hear, that's, you know, being the benefactor for the better argument.
Mm-hmm.
It costs more to get that out of it than it would with a CD.
Yeah, just... Not even so much the product itself, but the gear to run it.
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
the gear itself is what really where all the cost comes. Because you got speakers, you got phono preamps, you got cartridges play a big role, if not probably the biggest role, to be honest with you, because that's what's picking up
point
all
of
the
contact.
Source material.
But there again, source material is another thing that you can
source material
you can
is,
argue on every format. You know.
Because there's, and it's like the CDs when the loudness wars were going on and they were compressing everything.
That sucked.
And that was where CDs got their bad rap from, was the loudness wars. But
I have a fucking old Black Sabbath CD from the fucking mid-80s. That shit sounds sick. Dude.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's a digital transfer from the fucking analog tapes. And they did it right then, you know?
And that's how most today... There are very few records that are actually made in an analog fashion. I know.
It's so much cheaper, dude, to fucking
to do it digitally.
Do it on a computer.
And to find that working equipment is fucking like pulling teeth. I mean, you got to have the right amount of money, space, connections, everything.
Which makes it all the more cool when somebody does do this shit on
like
tape.
Jack White still does analog, but he may record to tape, but I bet you it's digitally transferred to the record when it's cut.
I would agree that probably is. And if it's not, I bet you it is. It'd be so much cheaper to do it that way, I think.
Yeah, because you can still, on a hype sticker, say sourced from the original analog tapes. Because
it is.
Because, like, Mobile Fidelity got caught doing that shit where they were, you know, they always put, I got a MoFi CD right here. This is a Super Audio CD. They always put that original master recording thing up top. And that was, like, a sales gimmick, I think. And it worked for a long time, but eventually they got debunked as using digital masters.
And I almost fucking, like, everybody was bitching about that, but there is no fucking where on that thing that it says, like, it's sourced from the best available.
Mm-hmm.
Always has, so, like, the people got all fucking butthurt about it.
Yeah, and you have to think, some of those tapes, like, I'll use Kind of Blue again for an example, like, that came out in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
And has been redone since then at least once a year in some format. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
In some way or another.
Whether it's, yeah, whatever format it would be, I bet.
Yeah, so those original source tapes are honestly, like, shitty by now.
Well,
if they even exist.
I think what they do is they copy
them. Columbia had those fires that destroyed, like, a shitload of stuff.
Oh, that sucks. But I think they copied them. Like... you'd have to look this in the Blue Note thing, but I think they're all copies of the originals. And then they, like, they're clones on tape of, like, exact copies.
Yep.
You know I know. What I mean? So I think Blue the Beatles Note, did that a lot, too.
Yep. Blue Note, I know, does, like, Kevin Gray that does Coherent Audio, the way they cut. I've watched the videos. They have the 10-inch tape reels on quarter-inch tape.
Yep.
Or no, I think it's half inch tape. And they cut directly to the record.
The tape's playing, it's cutting the grooves,
it's
right?
Cut right to acetate, then they make the master play and go on to make the records and whatever. And you can hear that because I've heard original Blue Note records. I have a couple. And if you compare them, like Speak No Evil, Wayne Shorter, like I've compared the original mono to the Classic Records repress that they did. Both sound outstanding, but to be honest with you, in a lot of cases, the classics and tone poets now almost sound better than the old ones because the technology is better, the cutting technology is better. Finding a clean copy of that old record is
the availability
damn near impossible.
Is like you're going to pay $25, $30, $35
or $300,
yeah, $300, whatever.
Like, I sold Wayne Shorter Juju an original for $700.
Yeah, that's insane.
And then I just got a repopped classic copy for $30 and it sounds better. Because there's not as much surface noise and bullshit packed into it.
It's interesting.
And that's one thing that I love records, but surface noise bugs the shit out of me. It really, really irks me.
Well, we're going to have to...
And I try to do everything.
We talked about doing a program.
Oh, yeah. That'll be a thing at some point.
Yeah,
we're going
to
show
how to get rid of that.
Eliminate as much as possible because it's not always...
And wintertime here is super fucking dry and like staticky.
Yep. It's rough in the winter. It just irks me though, and some people love surface noise because I've overheard in the store like, "Oh, I love
the pops
cracks
and the clicks,
and the pops." And I'm
remember,
like,
of course you do, but like, songs like old hip hop songs. I mean, the fucking they'd almost use the pops as in the scratches, not even like not scratching, but like you know the surface noise as a part of the fucking.
Yeah, because a lot of the times they weren't putting it out on a record, or they didn't think that the surface noise was going to double up. The Fugees, The Score, is one that I can think of that cram-packed a lot of surface noise into there, just in the album itself.
Yeah.
So when you listen to the record, not only can you not get rid of the surface noise, but it's doubled up.
Well, it's like, but then at the same, that's what makes that album sound like that too, though. I think.
But it pisses me off when it's doubled up. like you got the surface noise that's recorded onto the album, yep. and then you have the surface noise of the album. Actual album.
Yeah.
And it makes it, that's why, like, in that particular case, like, that would be one that the CD, I bet, would be better than the record.
Now, as for the record, I can just speak from my own opinion and experience, is that's like a, it's more real, like, ritualistic, I guess, you know? And it's like putting the record on and fucking, clean, you know, doing a little duster and putting this on and that on, dropping the fucking stylus on it, for sitting records, down, blah, blah, blah.
It's a way more rewarding experience. Right.
That's, yeah. It's,
and
it's
you're more involved. You're more involved in it.
But it's like you got to set time aside for it. I've noticed, like, lately I've been, I'd never used, like, the little earbuds because, I don't know, fucking long time ago those things hurt. Now they make them, like, so fucking, like, comfy.
Yeah, wear those bitches everywhere now. Yeah.
Like, at the grocery store, fucking people. There was, like, some shit going on. Like, some dude was being a complete prick to the fucking clerk chick, and she's, like, waving me over, and I'm like, I'm just fucking... Yeah. Oh, what's going on? And this guy's like, yeah, fucking bitch, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you need to settle the fuck down, dude. And, like, it was just weird. I'm like, oh, back to fucking my own little world, you know? It's interesting.
Yeah. Another thing that, at least lately, has been rough for record collecting, pricing is getting...
Yeah, they're getting
They're outpricing themselves, like, quite a bit. I mean, $20, $25, $30 for a record is pretty... standard. In most cases, it's fair, depending on what you're getting.
What pisses me off is if you pay $30-$35 for a record and all you get is a fucking single sleeve,
not even a poly sleeve,
not a poly sleeve, and a record, like, no insert,
there's no insert,
nothing.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, really?
Yeah,
you can't,
and you
fucking
know that,
throw something in that motherfucker, yep, for $30,
and you know damn well they could have made it $20 to $25.
Yeah.
And but yeah, like, but I've noticed with, like, the big artists now, like Taylor Swift, Post Malone, like Chappell Roan, Sabrina Carpenter,
yeah, all,
I'm
the
trying
top
to think, all the pop
Billie
stars,
Irish.
And yeah, yeah, all of their records that come out now, double albums, $46.
Wow.
And it's simply because they know they can sell it off the name. There's no reason for it. There's nothing else added that's extra. They did that Chappell Roan album. I can't think of the name of it. The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess, I think is,
oh,
what the name,
yeah,
of it
it's
is.
Got that, like, fugly looking kind of beat up chick on the cover, sort of.
So in the last 6 weeks, I've sold 40 of those.
God dang.
Probably. Maybe not, maybe 30, but still, like,
that's cool.
But they did a 1 year anniversary repressing, which, for one, nobody ever does that, really. There's no reason for it.
Cash grabs.
And then, so the record itself was between like 35, 40, depending on where you bought it. The 1 year anniversary that they did was the same exact record. I think they might have done it colored, I think it was orange. And then they added this, like, green slipcase over the top of the record that had, like matinee, like, theater drape,
yeah,
type,
yeah,
of thing. And it, like, captured your face or whatever in there, $60.
Yeah, for the little fucking window.
For a slipcase.
Yeah.
On a one-year anniversary of a record that there's probably still thousands and thousands of copies of the first one out there. I know there is because I've been ordering them every fucking week,
yeah,
for,
dude,
like, a,
it's like,
2 months.
Adele, all of her records are like that. Even like Lana Del Rey, a lot of hers are like, there's certain ones, man, they're like $10 all day long as a record, you know, on Discogs, $10-$15, no problem.
Yeah, so Adele, especially Adele's 30, was it 500,000 that,
yeah,
they did?
It
was five,
it was just,
right? Yeah.
They really fucking overshot.
They overdid it.
It.
And, I mean, she's a huge artist, but still, like, 500,000 copies is a lot of copies.
I think, like, it's funny when I see, like, something that's, like, limited 10,000. I'm like, what? That's not limited.
No, limited to me was,
yeah,
like, 1,000, 2,000,
yeah,
at best. And
I would
then
say,
after,
yeah,
you,
like,
pass
three,
that,
3 grand and under is, yeah, pretty limited.
But yeah. Especially depending on who it is.
Yeah, the artist.
Let's say, like, you got some relatively unknown artist. $3,000 is a lot of fucking records. Yeah. They'd be down more in the 500s.
Yeah, it depends definitely who is putting it out. Like, if Taylor Swift put out $3,000,
yeah,
people'd be shooting each other for it. Yeah,
that would be.
But I do think,
I couldn't even imagine trying to get some of those.
Do you think that it's like gonna? Because I think it's gonna hurt the. It's almost like they're doing themselves in the long run. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are so many fucking copies of these artists that, like, it's got to pop at some time where they're just like how, like, with the Taylor Swifts, like, the vinyl.
I think
the vinyl,
already,
not the music, but, like.
No, I know what you're saying.
You know?
The physical
the collectability
product, yeah.
And, like, it's like, dude, you guys are fucking.
Well, what I would say is probably going to happen, because just speaking through watching companies be greedy, is they're just going to press it as many possible times as they can in every other fashion that they can until nobody buys it.
Yeah, I would agree.
And it doesn't matter if they, because, I mean, look at the Beatles, look at Pink Floyd, look at Fleetwood Mac. You could put the Beatles on this fucking water bottle cap and somebody would buy it.
Oh, definitely, dude.
And same with Pink Floyd.
But then I guess
you could put that prism on anything and it'll fucking.
But in that sense, we're almost talking, those are like logos now and trademarks and fucking
brands at this
point. Right. So it's like.
But I think, like, Taylor Swift.
Separate it from a.
Will become a brand eventually.
Oh, already is.
If she's not already.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, the peak goes, I think we've already, like, gotten there.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of.
I think we're on the. I think we're on the down.
Not, like, falling, but, like, definitely, like, going a little
down
from where it was. Because.
It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. I think it'll.
I think it'll be good
for. At least I hope. I think it'll be good for collectors because it'll drive the prices down a little bit.
And I think it'll be better for the smaller artists to get their shit on wax, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's. No matter what, there's always going to be record collectors. No matter what, there's always going to be physical media collectors.
There's always going to be a fucking.
Whether they collect tapes.
Beanie Baby
CDs,
collectors. Remember those?
Yeah. There still is, I'm sure, somewhere.
Oh, that's crazy.
But there's always going to be a market for it. But it won't be like everybody and their brother is picking this up type of thing.
Right, right.
But when it comes to, like, Taylor Swift and shit, it's. I don't know, man. She can sell anything. Like,
I made money off her, dude. Like,
you could make Taylor Swift spaghetti and sell it, probably. Taylor Swift toast.
I don't know.
Like, anything. I was going to ask, though, like, so for you, what is your, it's records, right? Preferred collect,
preferred,
like, format for collecting?
For collecting, yeah.
Okay.
For listening, vinyl. But again, I'll stream the fuck out of a lot of shit because, I mean, it's hard to.
Well, sometimes it might be something that either hasn't been done or the price of it is outrageous.
And that's there too. And I do have some shit on a few things, like, you know, like you do too, where you have, like, the trifecta, where you have a vinyl copy, a CD copy, tape copy, or whatever.
I can only have three.
Right. Like, I only have a couple, too, and they're kind of odd. But, I have a lot, like, not a lot, but more CD and cassette ones, and it's like, if there's a CD, man, like, the tape thing to me, buying cassettes now, like I've said before, is more of, like, a support the band kind of thing.
Right. Because some bands, that's the only way they're doing shit right now.
Right.
And I get it. It's cheaper. It's quicker. It's.
But it's, when they put out a CD, too.
Yeah,
it is so noticeable. Like, it is so noticeably better, dude. I mean, I don't know how. Even better than, like, if you're, unless you have, like, some really good, like, I know Apple Music apparently is really good.
Yeah, there.
But I use Spotify, and
so
it's
Spotify
depends.
Is still MP3s,
right?
The way
so
they stream.
The CD sounds like it just sounds a lot more clear and crisp than. Spotify, so I'll go for that, you know.
Well, just like a brief little thing about Spotify. So they're still using MP3s, which in most cases, I mean, unless you're really, like, trying to find the difference. It's not like a huge, huge difference. It's usually got to be stuff that you're like really familiar with hearing, that you've heard a bunch of times to know where to pick out the differences. But I've done like side by side, like decibel readings of Spotify versus Apple Music on the same thing. And this isn't always like a surefire sign of a better recording. It could mean worse in some cases.
Oh, you're just going by loudness?
But just the decibel readings for Apple Music are like 6 to 8 decibels higher on the same volume, same song, same pieces,
everything. Yeah, everything's
everything.
The same. That's fucking crazy. But it would make sense because, fuck, man, MP3, they just compress everything as small as they can.
Yeah, and it works great for ease of access, for storage. Streaming in most cases. I mean, it's, I get why they do it, but at the same time, every other streaming platform that there is, at least that I know of, Amazon Music, Google Music's dead now. I think they shut down. Tidal, Apple Music.
I had Tidal, but I believe it was overpriced and their fucking
it is
lossless audio or whatever it was.
Master audio.
Yeah, it was like it was some tricky. It was kind of like the MoFi thing where it's just there. I'm like, dude, that's not. I went just whatever Spotify. Hence, like.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, fine-tuned details to that, and I'm not going to get into all that, but...
I just think, too, and...
Spotify could...
It depends on the genres, too.
Oh, yeah, always.
You know?
I mean, when you're looking for... I mean, in, like, hardcore, punk rock, even metal, in most cases...
Hip-hop.
You're not looking for high-fidelity recordings.
No.
And, like, it just... You want to hear it, how it sounds good to you. And some of that... takes the fun out of it. Like if you're always trying to find the definitive version of everything, sometimes it can be more of a job than an enjoyment.
Yeah, and enjoying the music for sure. I always like to compare them with like the vinyl versus the CD every now and then.
That's why I like to do it is just comparison because then you. But I do it in a way that I'm not breaking myself or making it unenjoyable. Like
right.
I never want. Musical consumption and physical collecting to be like stressful or like aggravating or unenjoyable in any way. And,
yeah,
like,
then it's like it's not
if
fun.
You're always stressing, like, damn, I need that record. That record's $300.
Yeah, I don't.
That
even...
record's not worth $300.
That is the beauty of the time that we live in because if we didn't have streaming, it would be like, damn, we need $300 to hear this shit.
Yeah.
So,
but now you can just go type it in and hear it how you
so
want
that,
to hear it.
That's definitely cool, but I don't know. It's just because we're fucking who we are and we like physical shit. And
yeah, and there's
to support
people that are going to be physical media consumers and love having it for one reason or another. And then there's going to be people that are like, I don't give a shit as long as I can hear it one way. I can... type it in on my phone and hear it, and that's fine. There's
I will say this, man.
That.
I can't. It's like, and I'm sure you can too. Is like, if there's an MP3 playing, I mean, it's like you can just fucking automatically tell.
You can.
It's like
if you know. So I've because
I just feel like the
one
bass
point
isn't
in time,
as crisp.
Yeah, there's that. There's, I mean, there's a lot of shit to it. There's no breath to the music. Is like how I say. Like if you had. Like, if let's say you had a trumpet and a set of drums, and you don't have that trumpet, like, almost hitting your ear in an ear-piercing way, but not in, like, a, oh, my God, that hurts way, but it should sound more, like, crisp and more prominent than, let's say, like, what the bass guitar should sound, because that is a lower frequency all across the board. But if everything sounds the exact same, which is how MP3s are made, is just to run it straight across, compressed. And then, but if you've never heard it any other way, then you don't know any better.
Exactly.
Because there was a time when I was like, well, MP3s sound fine. I mean, it's streaming sounds fine, whatever. But then, like, you hear this or that. One way or another, and you learn how to pick out shit, you're like, oh, wow, there is a big difference between this and that and this and that. And some people don't give a fuck, and that's fine.
It's
like,
crazy,
you know, everybody's got their hobbies. You know, like, some people are going to listen to this and be like, who the hell gives a shit? Like, well, just fucking play it.
If it's like a, like you said, it's all compressed, right? You got a straight line. You're taking all the waves out.
Yeah.
So you're, I mean, that's...
It'd be like if you were talking right now in your speaking voice and I was yelling and they were coming out at the same volume.
Yeah, it'd just be fucking like, strange.
It'd be weird. Like, what would be the point? There'd be no dynamic to the music.
Now, here's another in the world of dynamics, which I think 45s... Well, they do, and I know they have a like a wider frequency range
because of the speed, yeah.
But I think 45s sound better than 33s. They can fit more shit in there.
There's a few reasons for that too.
And they make hotter cuts on them sometimes. But there were those wars, man.
The
like
speed
the LP
is one...
came out, and then the fucking 45, which yeah. most people think is the other way around because
yeah.
it makes sense, single LP, but not the case.
So we were looking at this up beforehand. So the first 33 and a third was what, like 1948, 49 or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, yeah.
It was Columbia Records, at least for the first mass-produced one. I don't know when the first 45 was, to be honest with you.
Was
at
the year
least at, not off the
so
top
48, 48 was Columbia
okay.
with a 33, and then 49 was RCA with
was
the 45. Fucking 45.
Okay.
And then the wars began.
So for 33s... the outside of the record, and you'll see this sometimes on, like, Mobile Fidelity did it a lot. UHQR is another company that does it a lot.
Yeah, you they did a lot of the Van Halen ones.
Record
they do a lot of shit. RTI. Technology, I believe, is what the fuck that HQ quality fucking stamper plays.
Yeah.
Pressing plant.
Well, this is sort of a bad example, but... in this center right here where this dead wax is. So the further that when you're playing a record and it's going from starts out here, leads to the center, the further that you're going into the center is the more revolutions around it has to make to still run at 33 speed. You lose sound quality the further you go in. So you'll see some records that are this center dead wax is pushed, like, way the fuck out.
Yeah.
And that's because of that. 45s didn't really have that issue because they were the right size to where it stayed about the same distance to make that revolution, like, the whole record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It didn't shrink. It's the same circumference, or closer to the same circumference from start to end, basically.
Yeah. And I pulled this record specifically because I wanted to show this. This is a flexi disc. Back in the day, like, they used to put these in, like, magazines and shit.
They still do.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's real flimsy. I know you probably can't see it in there, but there's grooves on there to actually be played. So you would put this on a turntable, play it.
They sound like...
who was it? Suffer No Fools did one not that long ago.
Oh, yep.
On Heroes and Martyrs.
And Hard Feelings. Yeah, there's a... yeah, fuck. They do... they sound very, very thin. And
they do.
Are. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. It's almost, it's, they're really good. Like when magazines used to come out and, you know, they used to put mixed CDs in. Well, before the mixed CD, they'd put in those fucking flexies and you'd get like, you know, 2, 3, 4 songs on there from whoever they were interviewing.
Yeah.
But you could only really, you know, get a couple plays out of it, and it's like pretty
fucked.
Yeah, because
they're so thin that it degrades
yeah,
so quickly.
Fucking...
I brought in a handful of 45s. There's
yeah, that Pharaoh Monk one, I believe.
Tribe Called Quest, Scenario, EPMD, Strictly Business, and then Pharaoh Monch's Simon Says remix. But you can see on, and I'm just doing this for anybody listening that's like, what the hell's a 45? I feel like most people probably know, but you never know. But you can see, like, where the grooves are that end right about here, and it keeps the same distance of that revolution is what I was talking about.
Well, and nowadays they do some fucked up shit because there's 7 inches that are at 33.
It throws me off every fucking time.
And I hate when they don't mark them. Sometimes, if they don't mark them, it might be in the dead wax. But
yeah, like this one, like
punk rock, hardcore, metal, like singles and shit. Man, they're real bad about that.
Oh, I know.
You just gotta guess.
That says 45.
Oh, there you go. Because it'll be like some crazy
45.
Metal, and it'll be like And you're like, oh,
and
shit.
Then you don't know. Sometimes you're like,
oh damn, that's fucking sick.
That's pretty badass.
It's just like heavy like, as fuck.
Fucking doom metal band. And yep. Then you're like,
wait a minute.
And then, but if your ear gets used to it for a second and then you hear it at 33, yep. It almost sounds wrong.
Yeah, dude.
Because you're like,
I've done that with a bunch of shit.
Is this how this is supposed to be? Or.
Fuck. I can't think of, I'm trying to remember what I did that with last, because it's straight up what happened.
I did it with, so my Billie Holiday Lady in Satin record is cut at 45.
Okay.
I have like the special acoustic sounds one that they did 1,000 of. That's a scenario where the record blows out any version I've ever heard of it otherwise. And it constantly is a back and forth with that. But
I would have to say that's the best possible fucking version you can get of that record, dude.
Yeah, easily. It was well worth it. I think it was like $60, but I would buy it again and again and again. As easily that and Marvin Gaye's What's Going On that they redid for the 50th anniversary, easily two of the best sounding records that I have.
I have a 50th anniversary fucking Marvin Gaye.
The same dude that does all the Blue Notes did the Marvin Gaye.
Oh, Kevin Gray?
Yep. But yeah, that I played that Billie Holiday, it plays at 45. I played it at 33 on accident. It almost sounds like a whole different like dude singing that because their voice is already kind of raspy. But when you slow it down, it slows it down. So
it's going the other way. 33,
She just sounds like this like baritone of a voice of a man, like this like big weird. Like one of those, like a like the barbershop quartet singers. You always got the low guy.
Yep.
It sounds like one
She's
of those.
She's the low guy.
Yeah.
Now I've never looked this up, and always wondered. I don't know if you ever look it up, but I don't. Does that if you're playing something at 45? I don't think it would matter, but and it's cut at 33 or vice versa. Does that do damage to the fucking grooves?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so either, but
because. DJs all the time would speed up and slow shit down.
Right, and just like the Technics table, it's like you can fucking...
And granted, like, you get a lot of DJ singles in the store and stuff that are just demolished, but a lot of them were scratching them and shit. I don't really think so, though. Yeah.
I always wondered that, and then it just popped in my head to think about it.
It would still be, like, able to be played at one speed versus the other.
See,
but
like
I kind of think maybe
you get
45, if
you can learn this shit at 33 too.
Yeah, I wonder though, because like some turntables will do 78.
Yep.
Like that Audio Technica one I got up front. If you push both 33 and 45, it'll bridge it to 78 speed. And I wonder if that does any damage to anything. Because 78's quick.
Now, the only thing I can think of is.
But you need a different needle in most cases.
Yeah, you need a different cartridge and stylus.
Yeah.
And I know, like, my uncle rebuilt, like, a suitcase. Suitcase, like, 78 player. And, dude, they had, like, it looked like fucking drywall nails for fucking a stylus, dude. It was, you know, they're fucking huge. And they're only good for, you know,
they used to be a
couple of plays, really.
They used to be porcupine quills is what they're made out of.
Originally porcupine quills?
I believe so, yeah.
Sounds better than the hunk of steel I saw grinding on the fucking 78, dude.
So this is a 78, and by the way, don't hold your records like this, but this is complete shit, so it's toast anyways. But this, I don't know if this will translate in the audio.
It's not vinyl.
This is made out of shellac, actually. So like if I were to take this and drop this on the floor right now, it'd shatter into a million fucking pieces. But this was a 10-inch 78 from around probably 1930-ish, I would say. It's Jimmy Dorsey, so somewhere around there. And then I even grabbed... So this was from around roughly the same time. And I grabbed this just to... Because colored vinyl is another thing that I think we should talk about for collectability. But this was brown colored in like 1930, and a lot of people, I would assume, think colored vinyl is more of a new thing.
Yeah, that shit's been around forever.
It's been around forever. There's Beatles singles out there that are colored.
I have some really old, they're not 78s, but they're like, they're 45s and they're red. They're from like the early 50s.
Yeah. And then aside from 78s, there's also Edison Records.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is an Edison. This is also made out of shellac. But
those are a little harder to find.
You can see how thick that is. And that was like how, sort of how records were when they first started becoming flat, because they were actually originally like cylinders. And then they flattened them down to have the reading space, or the musical reading space up top. But this was like one of the earlier, this was 1924 is when this came out. It's not really worth anything. It's just cool to show like a sort of a history type of thing. And then this is like an acetate disc. Like this would be the disc that they actually cut to. But you,
oh, like a test?
You can see how flimsy that is.
You only get a few plays out of that and it's fucking toast.
This was also from 1920s. And I grabbed those just from the front of the store just to kind of...
I think that's another thing, you know...
Use them as reference.
...that makes CDs as far as, like, overall, they're, like, probably the most durable. I mean, records are pretty fragile.
They
are. As far as, like, dropping.
And they're very temperamental to weather conditions.
Yeah.
And it's like dropping, yeah. Handling is definitely a lot easier because you got a 12-inch surface versus how big's a CD? 5 inches or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I also grabbed this 10-inch just because this is a Cypress Hill 10-inch that came out on Record Store Day last year, the year before, maybe. This actually spins at 45. 10-inches don't really sell all that well. I have 5 of them.
5? I forget how many I have. Maybe 20.
Yeah, I know you got like a pretty decent
stack
of them.
I like them. But that's only certain, like, I don't know. It's like one of those things, I guess. If it's like a certain record. Like, I have What's Going On as a 10-inch.
So do I.
You know?
But I don't even, that's not even the album. It's like outtakes and extras or something.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like 4 different remixes or some shit like that. I haven't listened to it in a long time.
Yeah. And but, the 50th anniversary edition that I have has those on it, I believe.
I have Blood for Blood, Living in Exile.
And that's the only way it came out, though, is on 10-inch, isn't it?
I think, well, yeah. And
I think there was a Ramallah album that only came out on 10-inch and one that only came out on 7-inch.
Earth Mover's first album only came out on 10-inch and CD.
See, like, 7-inches were, like, the go-to for, like, punk and hardcore bands. And we've obviously talked about that 100 times over interviews and whatever. But I'm a sucker for 7-inch, like, picture discs and stuff. Or not picture discs, picture sleeves.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I like
even the if
little
you don't,
ones.
Even if you don't have any picture on it, like, if that's the only way I can get your demo or a couple songs or whatever, like... 45s are cool to me. I don't play them a ton because it's a constant swap in, swap out. Like, I like that Technics turntable for it because it's real quick and easy to swap speeds. Like,
that's
you and I both have. Yeah, you and I both have the Project table, and that's got sort of a slow startup speed, so it's annoying to play 45s on.
Yeah, because it's got to crank itself, and I love just having the.
Yeah, like the Technics, you can just...
has a motor, so
it's got
it's
a
just,
motor,
boom.
You're already there. Like, as soon as you push the button, you're there
tight.
In a second versus waiting for a wind-up speed to kind of happen.
But there's so much good music in those genres that they just put out a 7-inch, and it's like, that's
it. The cheapest way to put it out at the time. And, like...
And nowadays, with all the bands, people being from 5 different fucking states... And just going online, hooking up with each other, they can put that shit out like that.
Yeah.
It's like super groups. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Motown was notorious for singles. Stax Records was. that was just like how they, it was easier like to distribute. Singles
sold more then, you know, and then it shit, I wouldn't have, and they really still changed till the late 60s. Yeah, it went back. Singles now, who makes, it's all fucking digital singles.
Yeah, because like you get an artist that's coming out with a new album.
And the shit's moved so quick, I mean, fuck, man.
And they come out with the singles first, which is kind of how it's always been. And you got to promote your record. I get that. That's how you do it. I mean, but not everybody wants more than just the singles. They're just like, oh, I like those couple songs. Never heard the whole record. I'm like, well, if you like the couple songs, wouldn't you want to hear to see if the rest of them are good? But
what I thought was crazy is I was watching a YouTube thing the other day, and out of like the top 400 downloaded artists on Spotify, only three of them are bands that were created in the 2010s.
Yeah, I That's think
fucking so crazy to me, dude.
It is crazy, but I think that has a lot to do with the record labels that own the bands or own the rights to the band or whatever. Fucking
music, yep.
Yeah, because like I've thought about this in terms of movies too. Like there's, you know, you have your Johnny Depps and Denzels and big platinum, mm-hmm. like A-list actors, actresses, etc. And it works that way with movies and music. Like you have, you know, let's say Warner Brothers did your movie, you're going to have way more reach than if like fucking Grindhouse did your movie.
I think depending in that sense, depends on like, I know a lot of people would just watch like, Black Mass was an independent movie, I believe. That Johnny Depp in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's independent directors.
But
I'm saying, like, if you had, we'll use Top Floor Tapes as an example. Okay. Like, what up, Jimmy? Top Floor Tapes versus Columbia Records or something.
Well, yeah, that's like, fucking
you're gonna have,
David and Goliath and shit.
Right, yeah, exactly. But I just needed an extreme for one versus the other. Columbia Records is going to have the promotion budget. They're going to have the reach. They're going to have the connections, everything to distribute that to where. And then they're going to have the finesse to have radio stations playing that shit.
Well, for sure.
And that's been that way since the beginning of record labels.
I just think in films, it's the actors and the actresses who are in the movies are what sells the movie now.
Yeah. And I think at this point, they're probably mostly
And it has to be because there's no fucking new stories.
Yeah, they're not making any movies that haven't been done.
And think of all the people that are fucking superheroes. Like, they're just like, oh, I got to make a buck now. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that does seem to be the cop-out for, you know? Like, oh, I'm going to be the new Green Lantern.
I don't know.
Okay. Ryan Reynolds already
There are a few movies out there that are, like, you know, worth checking out. But I just mean, like, I think that the actor or the actress sells the movie more so than the production company.
Oh, yeah.
Or the distributor. Yeah, then it's like now we're in the streaming thing too, so that kind of fucks it all up.
I think it depends.
And everybody
obviously
has
there's
their
a circumstance
own,
to one way or the other, but
their own, like, you can be so customizable now. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's really crazy. So you could just be like, I'm into this, 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 and this, and if you're not into it, then I'm not hanging out with you. Where you had to make a lot of compromise back in the day, and now it's like, I don't know, it's strange time.
Yeah, and it is crazy, like what you said, only a handful past 2010. But I think that's because, like I said, record labels, I mean, they already ate up everybody that they wanted to eat up. Now, like, everybody, if you're on a major label, like, you're expendable to them one way or the other. Like, they don't really give a fuck.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I think that's just
as
like,
as soon as you stop making them money, I mean, that's been happening forever. Look at every band that's happened to. Like, as soon as you stop making them money, they kind of kick you to the side or whatever. And then, let's say you owe them a record under contract, they pump out some piece of shit and give it to you. Like,
that,
how many
that's
Kiss
happened
albums
in,
were that way and Van
in,
Halen
independent
records and,
yeah. Independent fucking labels that I can think of where that has happened, like Victory Records for one.
Mm.
Made mother, like, oh, you're locked in, like, really, dude? I just think that's kind of fucked, but
it is.
And that guy sold all the shit.
And didn't he sell it to Sony or something?
something like that. One of the big motherfuckers.
One of Sony's like many sublets.
They don't even need it. But speaking of Sony, since I have it in my hand, and I forgot to mention the old mini disc.
Oh, I thought you were gonna hold up the Walkman.
No, but this is technically a Walkman, a real Walkman, a mini disc Walkman. Walkman.
Is there a mini disc in there?
Yeah, I'll pop it out. Because
I feel like there's a good chunk of people that are like, what the fuck's a mini disc?
So this is a mini disc. Can you see the disc in? Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
It's a 3-inch CD, essentially.
And it's recordable, rewritable. The sound quality is fucking awesome.
It's almost like a fancy floppy disc.
Pretty much, but it's like, the case is just like the transport, you know what I mean? Like, there's still a CD in there, and then...
Yeah, because there was actually...
This little guy, can you see it? Slides one way or another.
Yep. There was actually a lot of CDs that came out in the mini disc format without the casing. Like, because I remember seeing 3-inch CDs.
And
if you look at a lot of CD players that have a disc tray that come out, when you look in the center of it, you'll see an indentation for what is a smaller circle.
That
was 4 mini discs.
I do have, now that I think about it, I didn't fucking bring them. I have a couple. Do you have any CDs that look like 7 inches? Where they're like...
They put grooves on them?
Well, there's that, but then there's where, I mean, it's like the logo will be like in the middle of the disc. Like, maybe I'll use a CD as portable. So like this will be... The music or whatever might be like a short EP or a couple songs, and then like all of this is like clear.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, I only have a couple. Now, Ramallah put one out like that, and I only got like the solid CD that always pissed me off. But I have like a Sick of It All one like that and an American Nightmare one, or Give Up the Ghost, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And those are cool, but...
I know.
Once you get 7-inch in like in records, you're like, whatever. This shit's way cooler.
I'm pretty sure it was Billy Idol that was the first person to
do that?
Put out a mini disc.
That's cool.
I think. It was on the, I can't remember the name of that album, Cyber something, Cyber Lover, Cybertron.
Oh, yeah, the one from the 90s.
Maybe. Yeah, it was a
weird
cover.
I think it's like Cyberpunk or something.
Yeah, so that was the first... release to have, I can't remember if it was a mini disc or like a floppy disc, but that was the first one that came out, and it totally flopped because nobody knew like what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
But he was the first to do it.
Yeah, I'd have
and it was a short-lived format too. It didn't really take off or go anywhere.
We're talking before about Universal Media Data discs.
Yeah,
those went in like your PSPs. Those weren't around very long.
Oh, yeah, those cased ones, yeah. Yeah.
But those were like movies. I don't know if they ever put any music on there.
I mean, you could, I guess, but... I seen video games and stuff. Another format that was...
I was just going to say...
This is a...
The last...
Lou Reed 8-track. I don't... Do you have 8... You have some 8-tracks, don't you?
I have like a few.
Yeah.
But I have an 8-track player that works. And the only reason is like... Well, you might get something that's cool on there to pop in. I don't know. It's just like some shit to hang on to. I know Integrity put out that fucking 8-track, like, I think in like 2010 or something, didn't they?
Yep. The Sword did one like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, it's so strange. Like, I wouldn't go out on my way to get any of that stuff, but it'd be funny to run across it and be like, dude, I can actually play this.
They're a clunky, weird format. I've never heard one that sounded good.
Why the compact cassette was already out.
Yeah, like why would you? Yeah,
it already
This thing, or I mean, you went from this little compact cassette, which already sounded better, and
to a fucking big ass 8-track.
This big ass 8-track, like most people think this was first. Like this was the predecessor.
Any older people out there, fucking tell me what that's all about.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
because then the 8-tracks were gone, and then the cassettes were back, and CDs came in. Like,
yeah, and 8-tracks were short-lived, and it seemed like mostly for like cars or something.
And LPs were going on the whole time.
They did quad 8-tracks, too. That was another thing.
Yeah, I have my 8-track player is a quad player, but it has a switch on it to turn it on.
So quad, just in layman's terms, is just double stereo, basically. Yeah. They just added it left and right, broke it up.
So you can, put a couple wherever. What would you call it, like early surround?
That's essentially what it was, is early surround. But it was very short-lived because it didn't take off. You needed different equipment, different needles, you had to have 4 speakers. You had to have the right amp to decode it.
Quadraphonic LPs they did.
Yep, which are, if you look, there's not many quad LP titles. Like there's Chicago, The Who, Jethro Tull, stuff like that. But there might have been some Black Sabbath, but just because they printed so much of that shit. But for the most part, not really. And it was very, very short-lived. But we do have some guys at the store that they collect quad stuff, and I'm like, they make,
that's what you're into, I guess.
But I'm just like, because they're like, oh, it's the surround, it's the back and forth. I'm like, well, if it's the surround for you, like, they graduated to 5.1 years ago.
Yeah, that shit's funny.
Like, you can run 13 channels now and up. Like, Dolby Atmos pretty much has, like, no, I don't remember. I think it's 11 channels is, like, where the whole cutoff is. Because the height speakers count, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have height speakers. I'm missing those.
It's crazy, though.
They don't make a huge, huge difference.
I mean, like, symphonic music, orchestral music, that shit would sound dope like that.
Yeah. The height speakers kind of just, they take very, very light frequencies and kind of like accent them. Yeah, there's not really like a huge benefit to it. This is another thing. We're just showing off random fucking formats here at this point. This was a digital video cassette. This is like, it looks like a little VCR tape, basically. These were like for camcorders and shit, but you could put music on them too. They had recorders for it. I've never had a player that wasn't, like, I had a camcorder when I was younger that was just like a fuck around thing, but
they used to have converters for those for your VCR too, I think.
Yeah, it had a little,
like, an adapter.
Yeah, they had the VCR tape and then the top flipped up and you can put it in there. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I remember those. This is a DVD audio. This was like another multi-channel thing. This is the Heaven and Hell Neon Nights show that was, is Black Sabbath, but for legal reasons, they had to call it Heaven and Hell. The DVD audios a lot of times came in these cases to be, like, in the early days, and that was kind of how you could decipher whether or not it was a CD or a DVD audio, but not always. Sometimes they just came in a regular-ass case, and you wouldn't know until you got it.
Those I do not have any of.
I have a few of these. But, like, Super Audio CDs, for anybody that doesn't know, like, you need a special player for them. Unless they're a hybrid Super Audio, then you can play it in a standard player, but they needed certain decoders within the player to actually bring out all the music out of there.
And I will say it does make a difference. The Super Audio versus, like, a regular CD is pretty phenomenal, the difference. But, like, the only ones I've heard are major, like, pretty big bands, I have Miles Davis.
This is a Super Audio CD, Run DMC's
Raising Hell. Oh, yeah, Raising Hell.
And this was really cool because they don't do hip-hop in this fashion.
No, never.
Like, barely ever. Like, but it was a cool idea to do it with Run DMC. I mean, they had Aerosmith on here, obviously.
Pixies one that sounds really good. Actually, the band songs from the Big Pink. That sounds really, really good. Like, I won't even, like you were saying before, I won't even listen to the fucking record. I'll just pop that in.
Yeah, there's like, and we were talking Nine Inch Nails. I'm like, that was Pretty Hate Machine. Like, that original copy of the CD, nothing wrong with it whatsoever. I've heard the record, and you're like, damn, this is lacking.
It sounds like not mastered right. Mm-hmm. I will agree.
Because they got to condense it.
Yeah, they must have just put whatever the fuck on there.
Bass is troublesome for records because the grooves take up such a high surface area. Yeah. But now, I don't know all the science behind this or how they do it now, but for hip-hop especially, like, I've heard some crazy bass
coming out of albums now
that...
Now, I think it's when they cut them at 45.
Yeah, but it has to be digitally done. There's no way they're doing that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And but think, yeah, why would you do? I mean, you're talking thousands of dollars in tape and all that kind of shit. Like, it just makes sense to do.
And
it
you
got to
cut, splice, repair tape, add it. Whereas, like, digital, you can just grab a section, put it here. This take sounds
better.
Like,
Zarface, think of, like, having to do that analog, dude. Yeah. They'd be like putting an album out once every 10 fucking years, you know? It'd take forever to cut that shit up.
And some people, like, it might take them 20 takes to get a good takedown.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that blood incantation, for example, when you're reading in the booklet, it says drums were recorded to tape, which was surprising because usually drums is what really takes the most takes to get it right. And then the rest was all recorded to digital. I don't know what their specific reasoning was for that, or it doesn't say, but I thought that was really interesting. But some artists just can't do it in one take, and I mean, I should say most artists and most labels or studios won't let you do it in one take because they want at least, like, you know, a handful to work with.
You can do better. Yeah. And then they'll chop it all up and shit and put the.
Yeah. But think of all the things that have been done in one take that are, like, phenomenal. Like Snoop Dogg, I was listening to an interview with him yesterday or the day before, and they were talking about, like, some of the Doggy Style shit was just mic takes, like checks that they were doing in the studio.
He was just fucking around
and then came out. And then he was like, all right, like, I'm ready to, you know, start writing. And Dre was like, that's done. Like, that's it right there, next. Like,
that's one
take done.
That's cool.
But that doesn't happen very often. That's a rare thing. And it's almost like it's a happy accident. Like, you gotta have the right producer that's willing to be like, that is the version that we're going to use. Because I know if I were a record producer, like, that would be my downfall, because I'm like, well, I feel like you could add a little of this or a little of that or a little, like, I would constantly be wanting to, like, find the perfect thing. But I guess you only know what the perfect thing is in that moment where you're, like, it feels right to you, I would imagine.
I think it just, you know, to me, producing a piece of music that's not yours would be incredibly difficult.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because also, if they're like, if this doesn't work out, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. And I could see what you mean, but yeah, I want you to do that 30 fucking times, please. Thank you.
Yeah, and then the artist is like, Jesus Christ,
yeah,
I'm tired of
fucking doing asshole.
So I brought in a reel-to-reel tape, too. And this is it was blank. I recorded some. So this has an original 6i Miles Davis recording on it, and also original John Coltrane Blue Train from the records. I do have a reel-to-reel at home that is fully functioning that I use not very often, but it is a lot of fun when you get to it. This is a 7-inch reel. They make them in 3 inches. They make them in 10 inches, and I believe they make them up to 12 inches as well.
I know they make some big ones.
Yeah, the big ones are 10s. I don't have any 10s because they need certain hubs and adapters to play them.
Makes sense.
And this is like 1/4-inch tape. The 10s use like half inch or more, 3/8.
3/4?
Well, 3/8 would be smaller. But,
well, yeah, 3/8 is under half.
But yeah, they use a thicker, wider tape. But as far as like sound goes, like reel-to-reel tape versus like, let's say, cassette tape, it's a world of difference in sound. And that has to do a lot with just the tape in general.
I was going to say, that's a lot to do with the quality of
the
tape.
Yeah, the speed that it's played at. But I will say that this is probably one of the most inconvenient formats to have. Because, one, you got to know how to wind it up in whatever machine you're using, which they're all kind of different. So, like, this side right here is one album, but there's 90 minutes on that side. And most albums at that time weren't 90 minutes. So you either got to record part of it to the rest and then flip it, or just flip it. But you got to either fast forward or rewind to your other take up reel to get the rest of the tape off so you can flip it. So it's never like a easy just pull off, pop back in thing. Like, it's always like a
whole chore.
It's a whole chore, but it's so cool to like sit there and watch a reel to reel be playing. Like, I have a hard time finding company reel-to-reels. Like a, we got a couple, but there's stuff that I really wouldn't like.
I had a few, like, I had a Janis Joplin, little, like, what, 5-inch reels?
Yeah.
That was about in the Cosmic Blues. That would have been the coolest one I had, but I didn't have a player or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I got my player, like, on a sweet deal, like, a while ago. And then I got, this is Maxell UD90 tape. They make it in UD180, which the number is the amount of time that's on the tape. This, just this tape reel alone, blank now, I believe is $40 just to get one.
Just to get a blank tape?
This, like, specific one.
Oh, gotcha.
Because this Maxell Gold was, like, not the best, but, like, top five for, like, recording reel-to-reel tape. And I just, I have, like, 10 of these. I managed to score, like, a good chunk of them a while ago. A couple of them I have sealed, actually. I haven't used them for anything yet. I'm waiting to find something, like, really, really cool that I want to record to them.
Yeah, before popping them open.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're temperamental. Like, we were talking how records are fragile. Like, these have to be stored in the correct fashion as well. Like, on the inside of here, I have silica gel packet. There's a plastic thing around the tape reel and around the actual, like, case for it itself. But if you get too humid, too hot, tape's exposed too long, it crinkles, it disintegrates, it breaks, it snaps. It's a fucking temperamental format. But it's cool nonetheless. Like, just
yeah, I think it's cool to fucking... Definitely cool to have that shit.
Just for historic purposes. Even,
and it looks
cool.
Like, and it looks cool.
Yeah, like my old, my Macintosh setup, I run just my reel-to-reel on it right now. That's just all that's hooked up to it. But before we start wrapping shit up, I wanted to, I think I know where you stand on this, but colored vinyl, do you prefer black or colored or have no preference? Or you just kind of get it how you can or what?
I just get it. I don't have any preference. But if I can get... I don't have a preference. This, like, I don't think a 180 sounds better, per se, than a colored regular weight one. But I usually see that shit comes out in colored, and then they'll have, like, the black 180 gram.
Yeah.
And I usually would go... I usually go for that one.
9 out of 10 times... It's the same on both. The 180s can sound better, though.
And it, and that's what I mean. It's not even a sound thing for me. It's just like, eh, it's just heavier. I don't know.
Me, like, where...
It depends, I guess.
I don't like... I don't mind colored or black, whatever. At this point, it's all made out of the same material.
Right, right.
It's, it boils down to source material at the end of the day, but... I don't like when you'll get a colored record and you're paying like $5-6 extra for the color.
That's why I usually go for the black.
I will always, yeah, me too. I will always buy black because of that.
Of the, yeah, of the cost.
Like, I'm not paying extra for, I mean, I'm not buying it to like be like, ooh, ah, cool. Like, I'm buying it to play it.
Right.
I don't care if it's a black plain disc, as long as it sounds all right, has the music that I'm looking for. I don't want to pay extra for a colored variant. I just don't. They're not that important to me.
Like, and what I think is crazy is usually, okay, most of the time, even, okay, let's say there's a $5 difference. It's like as soon as that shit drops and if it's an album that everybody seems to want, those fucking colored ones go through the roof and there's, like we said, there isn't any difference.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like a... It's a marketing trick, dude. We did, exactly. We talked about this in an episode once before. Like, they're gonna...
Like, remember when Death re-released all their shit? And we were like, fuck yeah! And then, like, they did it immediately after. And we're like, dicks.
And then they did it again.
And again. Oh, here we go.
And now they released them, like, all, like, what's that? Reflective material? Mylar or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Those were cool. They,
like, Relapse
cool,
does?
But, yeah. But, I remember when they first did them, it was like... I want to say it was like 2020 or something, somewhere around
there. Yeah, when
they
did the pinwheels?
Yeah, they did the pinwheels.
Those are sick, dude. I love that shit.
And I had a ton of them in the store because, like, I needed all of them. You needed all of them. Like, Ramblin' Ron. There was a bunch of people buying them up. because to me, I was like, oh, shit, yeah. Like, you don't see these.
No,
like,
and I didn't think they were going to
repop them. I don't know that they're going to do them again. 6 months down the road, there's another run of them. 6 months down the road again, there's another run.
I hate that trick, too, is they're like, we won't. It'll be like, we're never going to do this run again, and it's on whatever color.
In this fashion.
Right, and yeah. Then, like, they'll just change the color, and you're like, you. Or they'll put an OB strip on it or something fucking yep. gimmicky.
Yeah, there's always, I don't know. I understand the business side of it. I get it. Like, you have a market that you're trying to sell to. You got to kind of add new things for people to be enticed by. But
from a listener's point of view, it makes absolutely no yeah. difference.
Me personally, I hate OBI strips. They get in the way. They piss me off. Every time you want to take a record jacket out of a sleeve, you got to fuck with the strip.
I only have three or four of them anyway that are actually like true OBs.
Yeah, I have a handful. I don't know how many. One of them's an Iron Maiden one.
Ace is High.
Yeah.
But I don't ever play it. It's, like, too cool to fucking take out. Because, you, like you said, I'm afraid to rip in the fucking thing.
Yeah, what I do usually with them is sometimes they'll fit in the record jacket. I'll slide it in there just to get it out of the way. But they don't always. Like, Vinyl Me Please puts them on there. I wish they wouldn't. I'm just yeah. like, ah, I get it from a cataloging perspective because they're all the same fashion.
They do.
The
I have to put the record in and then, like,
and
jimmy
then slide
the, fucking,
the thing in. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's annoying.
Very.
So a lot of those I'll just fold out flat and slide it in the back.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually, especially if you're going to listen to it, you know, often.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, man. But I would say my preferred way of listening would be vinyl. But the best, you know, if I'm going to, right now today, if you're going to be like, you got fucking $20, are you going to buy 3-4 CDs or this one record? Mm. I'm going to buy the CDs to, you know,
unless it's a record that you're really looking for.
Right. Or like it's, you know, jazz, I think should be listened to more so on like,
it
vinyl.
Does feel weird to listen to jazz on a CD. I will
but when
say
it's
that.
On Super Audio, in my mind, I can justify it.
Yeah.
Is that weird? I don't know. Maybe because it's just the paper sleeves and it's all fancy and shit, but.
Yeah, but I have, like, so I have some, like, jazz CDs that are, I wouldn't say, like, high quality, but they're of good sources.
Yeah.
And they sound good. It just feels, I don't know, it feels less authentic because maybe it's because that's how that was put out originally. Like, in the 50s and yeah. 60s, when they were cutting these albums, they were all records. Like, there was no CDs. They weren't putting it on cassette tapes.
Well, yeah,
really.
It's like you don't want the monos. If they're, you don't want, like, that electronically yeah. altered stereo shit that they did forever with, like, the Beach. Well, they did it with everything. But.
Yeah, so there was a time, like, when they were figuring out the kinks of stereo and, like, different types of mastering techniques and stuff. Like, and I think that's where the whole analog versus digital argument really stems from is around then, because when they're working out the new technology, like, obviously they're going to run into issues.
Oh, for sure.
But in today's day and age, all those issues have been worked out fucking 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, and now kind of with the whole, I just see this in, like, testing equipment and, you know, in stereo magazines and shit. Now, the shit that they're comparing, it is so minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like,
I mean, there comes a time when your that's what I was gonna say. There comes a time when your ears are only going to hear.
Right,
I mean, you can only interpret to a certain frequency range.
You're end up paying for your dog to hear some shit that you can't. yeah, you know what I mean?
You're, like, paying for your dog to do one of these things.
Fucking, that's a good test. I recently, though, now that we're talking about comparing shit, I recently compared Throwdowns. You Don't Have to Be Blood to Be Family. CD to record. Record sounds better, but that shit was put on tape originally.
Yeah. I did that with, so one of my trifectas.
I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought the CD was going to sound better.
Yeah, but it probably was compressed and part of the Loudness Wars thing. Because that would have been
2000. 2000.
Loudness Wars were a little earlier, but still it could have been same shit. I mean, that's how they were doing CDs at that time, but.
Right.
So, like, one of my trifectas is Immortal, Sons of Northern Darkness.
Oh, yeah, right on.
I have the CD, I have the tape, and I have the record. CD wins that one every time.
Oh, Oasis, Be Here Now. which is, that's an odd one. The record sounds better.
You have the record, tape, and CD of that?
Yeah.
That's such a random one.
I know, isn't it? And Jane's Addiction. And that's because my old lady had the CD, so that worked out. And I grabbed the tape here. I was like, ooh, trifecta. But yeah. I do like that record. But in that case, the CD, my CD sounds better than the record. And but I think the record was, you know, just kind of popped out. You know what I mean?
Queen Latifah, All Hail the Queen, I have on all three.
Oh, that's cool.
To be honest, I don't really hear a huge difference between the three.
See, hip-hop, I don't think there. It's hard to tell.
It depends on what it is. Like, the one thing that I notice most for hip-hop, when you hear something like The Roots or Diggable Planets or something like that that was using live instrumentation.
Like, I was going to say true bands, yeah. It does, yeah.
Then you hear it, but for the most part, I mean, an 808's going to sound like an 808.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're bringing, you know, stuff through an SP-1200 or a Roland or whatever you are using. It's going to have that distinctive sound. But like we said earlier, I just wish more hip-hop would have... And there would have been no way for them to know that, like, records were going to become popular again. But I wish less surface noise was packed into interludes and stuff. Like, I get the appeal of when a band does that because they're like, oh, it'll make it sound like it's on a record. But
now, aside from
fucks you in the long run.
Aside from, like, underground hip hoppers that really fucking take care of their shit, like, when I was talking about, like, all you get's a record. Hip hop is notorious for that. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
And one of the worst ones is, and I don't know if anybody noticed when I posted it, but the Tupac All Eyes on Me, it, right on the fucking cover says 2 compact discs. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't even try to fucking change the cover, dude.
No,
so
they just
funny.
Reinterpreted the same cover.
Yeah, so funny.
And they did that with I think they did it with The Chronic too. I believe.
Where it says digitally mastered or some shit on it.
Doggy Style had it as well. Yeah, there was a handful of that shit that just
fucking funny.
But like I said earlier, you can benefit from a digital master if it's done correctly. You just gotta have the right guy to know what the fuck he's doing and where to put what and how to do it to where it doesn't sound like a over compressed loud piece of shit.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, as long as you're enjoying the music, that's
cool. Like, in no way was I,
We're not trying to be fucking...
We're not trying to, like, be pretentious assholes.
You
gotta listen
like this or you're not listening.
Yeah,
right?
Mostly this episode was to just talk about different formats of music. Like, if you collect tapes and that's how you love enjoying, you know, listening to your shit, then
more power to you.
Like, I hope that brings you all the fucking joy in the world. Like, rock those tapes. CDs, if you play 8 tracks, I don't give a fuck. Like, as long as you're enjoying it, like, and it brings you happiness, that's the whole point of that Lou Reed at home,
I think.
Yeah, it's because we had fucking 50
of them. Had to grab one.
Some guy brought in a whole box of them sealed.
So
like, years ago. We've still been giving them away since then.
But shit, man, that's about all I got on the wars.
Yeah, I mean, we've... Like,
this is not my Walkman.
This is easy shit to talk about, so we could... I think we've gone almost 2 hours here. So
really?
Yeah, we could easily make this another hour, but... I mean, this is what we do. Like, this was the whole thing of starting the podcast.
Out.
Like, this is collecting music and talking formats.
Yeah, just looking at the time now, and my fucking kid's probably like...
Where are
Those corn nuts aren't really cutting it, man.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
But no, he hasn't said shit, so that's cool.
But yeah, for anybody who's made it to the end of this, thanks for listening. We appreciate it as always. It's been a while since we did an episode with just the two of us, and I kind of wanted to get back to that a little
bit.
Yeah,
definitely. We'll
interviews,
do more.
Interviews are fun and all, but sometimes it kind of feels like you're having the same interview over and over again because it's...
Or you're asking the same...
You can only ask so many questions.
In the same vein, kind of.
Yeah. So it's fun to get these little topics to go back and forth on, like, kind of like how we were originally doing the podcast, really. But check us out on YouTube.
Subscribe to that shit, man. We need to get subscribers.
Subscribe to that shit.
Get to 1,000 and we'll fucking raffle off something cool.
Oh, we raffle off cool shit all the time anyways.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, maybe my virginity.
Jeremy put it in a glass jar years ago. He's been waiting for this moment. But yeah, check us out on YouTube. Subscribe to it. We do have Patreon if you're interested in that. Go check that out. There's a bunch of early access shit, exclusive to only Patreon shit.
Hey, I'm going to shout out. We got, what, 3 Patreons? Shout out Jimmy,
Bill. Nom. I don't even know who else is on there.
Shout out to you guys. You're the top 3.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were on there like right away, so we appreciate you. Shout out to you, dudes. All you guys do, sharing our shit all the time. The dudes from Happy Casualties, they always share our shit constantly. Detroit Head Check, that podcast, shares our shit. Like, yeah, we appreciate all you guys for, even if you're not tuning in weekly, just posting it, commenting in it, liking it, sharing it, everything else.
We'll be here either way, man.
Appreciate it, yeah.
Thanks for the fucking support. It's definitely rad.
Yeah. And we got some other cool shit upcoming, so stay tuned, and thanks for listening. Peace out.
Peace.